to get some more copies for the Fortran manual. It's actually out of print. Still a good book. So I don't know if we can get any or how many. But for the homework exercises, you will be doing programs, and the little book, which is actually 800 pages about Fortran, it's going to come in handy. So we'll see what can be done about that. What I want to talk about today in particular is how we represent numbers on the computer. It is a bit of bookkeeping, but it's going to be very enlightening, because you'll sort of understand a lot about the precision of numerical algorithms that we're going to be looking at later on. So the first thing I'll talk about is binary representations of integers. So if I write decimal 6, and today what I'll be talking about is a computer that would store everything in one byte. So one byte here is equal to 8 bits. An individual bit is either just 0 and 1. If you've been playing around with computers, you may know that 4 bytes is one 32-bit word. That may not always be the case, but there's a certain standard glossary that goes with this. So you talk about words and double words and so forth. But most particularly, it seems that everybody agrees on that what we call one byte is 8 bits. Okay, so if I'm going to write decimal 6 here, then I start with the high bits in my notation here. So the first 4 here would just be 0, and then we do 0, 1, 1, 0, right? So the way that this is usually interpreted here is that this we should multiply by 2 to the power 0. This here we should multiply by 2 to the power 1, and this by 2 to the power 2. So if we want to go back and think about what this would mean in our usual decimal system, then what is written here is actually 4 plus 2, which the last time I checked came out to be 6. Right. So this seems all hunky-dory, and we're ready to roll here, except for somebody came along and they invented negative numbers. And as you all know, negative numbers are the root of all evil. So we have to figure out how we write a negative number. Does anybody know how you would represent a negative integer? And I'm not going to listen to you. What? Yes, so the way it... What? But before we get to 2's complement, then one could try to do what is called signed magnitude. So what that would be is, we take one of the 8 bits here, and we say that's going to be 0 or 1, depending on whether our number is negative or not, right? So this here would be then the sign bit. And we would say if this bit is set, then we're not talking about plus 6, we're talking about minus 6. So why is this not brilliant? I'm not going to ask.
Anybody, what could be not good about this?
Yeah. 0 has 2 representations.
Yes, so 0 here has 2 representations. So we would have this, and then that, and that would be minus 0.
And then I would also have this one, and that would be plus zero. It also turns out that if you start adding things, then you're going to have to be a little bit careful. So the arithmetic is not as straightforward here. So imagine that you would have to write some code that would be manipulating bits here. Then it becomes to add or play around with registers. It becomes a problem if you have numbers that can be represented two different ways, right? It would mean an awful lot of if statements in your actual code, and so we wanna get rid of that. But I want to tell you about this sign bit here because it's actually something that crops up all over the place and is often used. So the next thing you do is what is called ones complement. Right? So you start here with your way of writing 6. And then what do I do? I simply replace all zeros by a 1 and all 1s by a 0. So I would get something like this. And that would be then my way of writing 6. And this here would be my way of writing minus 6. So the good thing about this is that if I add these two numbers, you can see that I actually get just 1111111. But that would be OK because in this case, I also have two ways of writing 0. The first one is the one that we all know and like. But I would also have this one. So ordinary binary arithmetic in this case, if I'm just adding 6 and minus 6, it's actually going to take me back, and I'm going to get a minus 0, which is sort of maybe the result that you're looking for. Turns out in this case that if you add numbers that are not as simple as this, you have to play around all the way also with a carry bit. But you can actually make up some working arithmetic that will allow you to play around with negative and positive integers that are represented this way. And I believe that this was actually a system that was in use up till, well, you're all so young, right? So maybe I shouldn't say when you were kids, but when I was a kid, right? And that was after computers were invented, right? Okay, so that's ones complement, and then somebody were already shouting out that we really should be looking at. Somebody ran away with the eraser. It's over here. So the way that they're actually done here is in twos complement. I don't know why anybody really named this twos complement, except for this is called ones complement. And then the next thing you can come up with is twos complement. And there's a reason, additional reason for that. And that's because we look at our representation here for we look at our representation in ones complement, and that was what did I have? 0000 and then 0110. And then we add 1, right? So if I add 1 to 1, I get 2. So logically, this is called 2's complement. So it would be this one, right? And oh, sorry.
this was too quick, right? I want to write minus 6. So it should be 0. So this would be minus 6 in 1's complement, and then I add 1 to it. So the end result here is going to be 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 0, 1, 0. Okay, so this here is minus 6 in 2's complement. And if you get hold of the Fortran book or the Fortran manual, you'll see that there is actually a whole host of intrinsic functions that are built into Fortran where you can go in and you can look at the individual bit in a word, and you can set it to not whatever you like. You can set it to either 0 or 1. But you can actually go in and verify that the computer you're working on uses 2's complement. So what we're going to have a look at here is just I can sort of start by writing in my little 8-bit number, I write all zeros, right? By the way, you can see what will happen here. So this here would be 0. Then I do the 1's complement here of that. That would be minus 0 in 1's complement. But then I add 1 to it. And then the question is, what happens? So if I add 1 to 1, then I get 0. Then I have a carry, so I get 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0. And then you have the irresistible urge to do something with the carry. But the computer doesn't do anything with it. It's just dropped. And that's why you can sometimes see when you're adding things to a number, then it suddenly rolls around and becomes negative and so forth. So usual way of doing integer arithmetic, you would drop the carry. It's just lost, right? So this here would be 2's complement of 0. And lo and behold, it's the same as the initial one. So in this case, there's only one representation of 0. Then let me do another example here. If I write 0, 1, 1, 1, and then 1, 1, 1, 1 here, this would be 127. So the positive integers are going to look just like you would usually do if you write a binary integer. Then I'm going to write a number here, which would be 1, 0, 0, 0 here, and then 0, 0, 1, 0. And that would be minus 126 in 2's complement. And then I'm hoping that, what should I get if I add them?
Negative 1.
I want to add them. Yes, I would hope we should. This is hard question. 127 minus 126. Can we all agree it should be 1? That's I'm hoping for 1 here, right? So the wonderful thing about this is that you could look at my way of writing minus 126, and I did this weird 2's complement, and you could say, well, what is this, right? If I now go ahead and then I just add, like you would usually add two binary integers, then we get a 1 here. Then here, I would get a 0, but then I would get a carry here, so I'd get a 0 there. I get another carry, so I get a 0, 0, 0, 0. And then, lo and behold, here I also get a 0. So the step here is done with ordinary binary arithmetic. You don't have to think. Right? And that's actually, so this scheme here, it was cooked up by somebody. I should look up who came up with this. It just works. This is how we would represent a negative number. So there are a couple of oddities here. So we can now list the bit patterns that we can look at. So this is my 8-bit pattern. And in 2's complement, and I'm just going to write 2's here, then this is interpreted as the integer 0. If I just were to look at this as an unsigned binary number that cannot be negative, so I don't know what you want to call that. That would be our usual standard way of interpreting. Then that would also be 0 here. Then the next one up here is, of course, 1. So that would also be the case here and there. And then we go all the way up, and then we reach 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1 here. Okay, so that is the number 127. And then, of course, if I go over and interpret it, then over here, this is also 127. The next one up here is now 1000. And then 0000. And if I interpret this as a 2's complement, then this is actually a minus 128. Right? On the other hand, of course, over here, then if I'm just looking at this as a binary number that I'm not allowing to be negative, then it would be 128. So the next one up we get here is just this one. And if I write it in 2's complement, then it's a minus 127. And over here, it's 129. And then I go down, and the very last one we can write is this one. 4 1's followed by another 4 1's. And in my 2's complement, that would be my way of writing minus 1. And over here, if I'm just reading this as a binary number, this would be 255. So in this might not be terribly intuitive, but if you just go along increasingly in your usual on-site notation, then the 2's complement interpretation of that bit pattern would suddenly jump from the most positive value to the most negative. So you can say here that I can represent from 1 to 127 in the positive range, and then from minus 1 to a minus 128 in the negative range. Okay, and any questions at this point? So if not, then I was just going to tell you about one other way of doing this. Which we'll be using a bit, and it's called excess, maybe excess n here. And the example that we'll be looking at here is n equal to 127. So basically, what you do here is that you you represent you use the binary pattern for your number, and then plus n. Right? So that would be, that would mean if I look at this scheme here, and then I look at the number 000 here, then in my unsigned notation here, then this would be just zero. But if I'm assuming that this bit pattern here would actually correspond to some number plus 127, then if that turns out to be just zero, then the initial number here, it would have to have been minus 127. So the next number up here is then, of course, this one. And here, well, it would be a minus 126. And here it would be 1. And then we just keep going. And the last one that we get is this one here, right? And that would be, if I get 255, if my number plus 127 is going to turn out to be 255, then the number must have been 128, right? So that would be another way of doing negative numbers. So enough with integers.
It seems to me that addition in this way of representing integers is completely foreign.
Yes.
That's why you use two's complement.
Okay, so it's just a possibility that isn't used.
Yes, and I want to tell you about this because I'm going to tell you about floating point numbers. And they actually use excess n for the exponents. You wouldn't do integers that way, but you can. So we need to figure out. So integers, we all know and love them, and so there's one thing I would. Which is trivial, but I want to tell you that if you can do numerical calculations, and if you can only do it in integers, please do so. Often you feel the urge to say, well, my integer looks cooler in reals, and then I'm going to do my computation using reals. But if you do so, you'll lose precision. Here, if you're not going to represent numbers that'll be bigger than 127 or so, then you can do everything exactly. So this binary arithmetic is exact, right? Given the constraints that we can't represent all numbers. That's not going to be true when I represent floating point numbers. So let me start with something. So I want to look at a binary floating point number. And I'll tell you what we mean by this, right? So maybe I want to write something here where I have x here is equal to 0, and then a bit 1, bit 2, bit 3, and so forth. And sometimes I may put a little, oh, it landed where it should. There's this story, right, you know, that Niels Bohr, it's a big family. And so some of his brothers were also well-known physicists and mathematicians and incredibly good soccer players. So there's this story about one of his brothers that whenever this happened, he would just do the soccer ball kick straight over in the trash can. I can't do that because I'm not in the Bohr family. But I also always want to try, right? So if I put a 2 here, then it means that I'm looking at a binary representation. Okay, so the way that this is interpreted is now I take B1, which can be either 0 or 1, and multiply it by 2 to the minus 1. Then I take B2 here, and then I multiply it by 2 to the minus 2, and so forth. Right. So if we do this, then I can sort of group things together here, and I can look at 4 times B1 plus 2 times B2, and then plus B3 here, and then I can multiply that by 8 to the minus 1. Then I can look at plus 4 times B4 plus 2 times B5 plus plus B6, multiply that by 8 to the minus 2. And then I can look at this, and I can say, oh, well, that's actually just a way of writing things in the octal base, right? So it's very easy to go from, for instance, the binary number to the octal number, because what you would be doing here is that you would just take, so we have some number here, and so forth, and in base 2, if I want to get that in base or in the octal form here, then I would just look at each 3 patterns or each 3 bits here, and I say I would have 3 there, then I would have 6 there, then I would have another 3, and this would be 5. So octal, that would be the number. And then from octal, you can go to decimal. Decimal is, of course, not a power of 2. So it's a bit odd to convert to the decimal form. If you want to go to hexadecimal numbers, it's easy. You look at your binary pattern, and then you just pair 4 bits, right? And you're in hexadecimal.
It will suppose you want to access the zeros and ones that we I want to manipulate binaries, and I use hex or octal numbers to sort of represent strings of binary. Does it store them in big endian or little endian format on the computer?
I'm not sure what you mean.
There's 2 ways of storing hex numbers. You either store them from like big endian or little endian, which determines which directions the higher order digits are.
The computer that you'll be using is
always going to be 32 bits, right?
Okay.
So in this case, there's no confusion. So if you start looking at what you would call big endian machines, trays and whatnot, then a lot of what I'm saying may be different, but you'll suffer through that once you get to that. Mm-hmm. When I started programming, it was
the internet just went dead. Hope I didn't. Did I destroy it? What was I saying? Yeah, when I first started programming, it was on a 48-bit computer, which was a bit odd by today's standard. You'll get it for this afternoon's tutorial. You'll get to play around with this, and you can have a look at it. Some of this may depend on the underlying hardware, and I actually haven't checked out the hardware that is on Proteus, and so there might be something that would give us a surprise, but I don't think so. Okay, so usually we talk about normalized floating points. And if we don't for a minute talk about computers, but just think about what we would, in ordinary scientific notation, call a normalized floating point number. The floating point sort of comes from the fact that I can move this dot here, or floating point, I can move it up and down by increasing and decreasing the exponent, right? So one way of normalizing it, but by all means you can have your own choice, is that I could write this as 3.7218 and then times 10, right, or 10 to the power 1. Or I could go down and write 0.37218 and then times 100, right? So the same thing here applies to a binary normalized floating point. So without going into yet how we would represent it on the computer, it's going to be on a form where I would have plus and minus some number that would be this one, I call it the mantissa, and then times 2 to some power m, right? So q here, it'll be either 0, b1, b2, and so forth, written in binary, where you know that b1 here is different from 0. And if B1 is different from 0, then it means that it'll start as a half and then plus something else, right? So the mantissa here will be between a half and less than 1. The other representation that we're actually going to be looking at, because that would be the IEEE standard, is to say that really what we say here is that the number that we are targeting for shifting up and down here is written like 1 times dot b1, b2, and so forth. In this case, well, so you're basically making this choice, if you like, or the binary version of that. I'm saying it's the first bit after the period, which is equal to 1, right? So this would mean that this year would go now from, it would be at least 1, and it would be less than 2. So what is going to be confusing, and what we'll see in 2 seconds, here. So let me just tell you something. So if I have the number that we all know and love, which is a tenth, then well, I write this as 0.1 in my decimal system, right? But unfortunately, if I convert that to the octal system, then I get 0.0 here, and then 6314, 6314, 6314. And if you guess hard, you can probably realize that this is going to go on, right, in the octal system. So in binary, if I'm not looking at a normalized form yet, then I'm going to get something here with 3 zeros, and then 1 1 0 0 1 1 0 0 1 1 0 0, and then it will never end. So it will be truncated. So I cannot represent a tenth exactly in this binary format here. And even though you're horribly inclined to think that in our decimal system, at least I should be able to write 0.1 without a loss of precision, then that actually can't be done. Let me tell you a little story. On February 25, 1991, what was going on? What? No. During the, well, probably the stock market also crashed at that time, we can check. It's always has a tendency to do that, right? It was during the Gulf War. An American Patriot missile battery in Dhahran, Saudi Arabia, failed to intercept an incoming Iraqi Scud missile. The Scud struck an American army barracks and killed 28 soldiers. A report of the General Accounting Office, I actually remember this, entitled Patriot Missile Defense Software Problem Led to System Failure at Dhahran, Saudi Arabia, reported on the course of the failure. It turns out that the course was an inaccurate calculation of the time since boot due to computer arithmetic errors. Specifically, the time in tenths of seconds as measured by the system's internal clock was multiplied by 1 over 10 to produce the time in seconds. This calculation was performed using a 24-bit fixed point register. In particular, the value 1 over 10 has a non-terminating binary expansion. And you can probably guess what would that mean. If you terminate this and then multiply by a high number, your error is also going to be multiplied. Indeed, the Patriot battery had been up around 100 hours. And an easy calculation shows that the resulting time error due to the magnified chopping error was 0.34 seconds, and then everything failed. Basically, it couldn't detect the missile. And this was one of these things that you switch on in all the tests. They switched on the missile system, worked flawlessly. But of course, in a real situation where you're sitting there out on the battlefield and you are afraid of these incoming missiles, you're going to have it on all the time. And so the operating system was just running and accumulating errors because nobody had thought about the fact that 0.1 cannot be represented exactly. So it's may not be exciting, but it's something that we should all remember. Onboard restraints.
In 1991?
You're going, well, they weren't using Windows Vista for sure. That's, why they did this and so forth, it's probably all the classified information. So I want to tell you about how we would actually represent things. So on your computer, I hope, what we'll use is some IEEE standard floating point. Right? So it'll be precisely of this form here. So we'll do some plus and minus q, and then times 2 to the power m. So I have to figure out what the sine of q is, and that's stored in 1 bit, precisely according to the lines where we talked about signed integers here. Then I have my value here for m here, which is in the following 8 bits. And then I have the actual number q here. And that is the remaining 23 bits. So the way it looks in memory is that we have the 32-bit integers. So again, I told you that most computers that you'll come by today, they'll be using 32 bits if you're not asking for something else. Corresponding to 4 bytes here. And the first one up here, that's going to give us the sine. So let's call that S here. Then we have the exponent. So that would be the following 8 bits here. And it's going to be written precisely in this XS 127. So I can have an exponent which is both negative and positive, but what I actually stick in there is the XS 127 shifted number, so it'll always be a positive integer. And then we have the normalized mantissa, but the way it is normalized is according to this rule here. And so what you put in there is 1.b1 and then down to b23. And so here's the trick, and that's the fact that since we are using this normalized form, and we know that we're going to shift all numbers so that this bit is 1, we're not going to write it. So this is not written it is implicitly assumed by your representation. So you could think that the result of this means that really what you're gaining is one extra bit, because you can assume that that is equal to one and work with that convention. So this is what, I don't know, if you start looking at fancy hardware, this may not be the way it works, but on a basic box, this would give you a good idea of how the floating points are going to be laid out. Of course, what I have here is just a 32-bit pattern, and I could just go in and look at it, and if I don't want to interpret this as a floating point number, I could just interpret it as an octal number or a hexadecimal number. Okay, are there any questions about this format here? So for the tutorial this afternoon, I'm going to give you a hexadecimal number, and then you're supposed to tell me the floating point number in decimal that would correspond to it. Isn't that going to be fun? So you, what you would do is I would take your hexadecimal number and look at the bit pattern, and then you can just figure out what the sign is, you can figure out what this is, and then you would look at the mantissa and then interpret it according to this rule. Most of the bits are actually going to turn out to be zero, so the actual calculations involved in this is rather straightforward. Okay. So, if we look at this format here, then you can see that the exponent here that we can have, and if I'm working with this format here, then it would be whatever number C that we have here. So it would be C here, and then we have to subtract off our excess number, which was 127. So that can actually then go from a minus 126 here, and then all the way up to 127. So if I look at the numbers I can write with this, the largest number I can write here, it would be 1.1111 and so forth, where I have the 23rd bit set here, and then I would multiply that by 2 to the power 127. Now you can evaluate this, and it actually turns out to be 2 to the power minus 23 times 2 to the 127, and for all matters, we're just going to say that that looks like 2 to the power 128 to all of us. And if I convert that into decimal numbers, then I get something with a power 2 to the 38. So if I use a number like this with 32 bits, I cannot go beyond the power 10 to the 38. I can, of course, also write at the look at the smallest number that I can write, and
if we're biasing by 127, shouldn't it range on the from negative 127 to positive 128?
255 minus 128 is
1. I think you might be right. Yeah, yeah. That would be.
And I know you're omitting all one.
So maybe it's like this, 128.
Because that's the D.
Yeah. So which is, so would there be yeah. I think that. So it should be. I think that would be right. Yeah. In any case, if I look at the smallest number here, then I can do the same thing here. Well, it's going to be something like either 2 to the minus 126 or 2 to the minus 127. So this is going to be roughly 10 to the minus 38. So if you remember, yesterday I talked about the fact that you can go in and you can demand a precision for your floating points, and that would be precisely this range here that you would be asking for. So if you're asking for a range in your exponents which goes beyond 38, the computer is going to try to see if it can do better than 32 bits here. And probably that would be going up to 64 bits or something other than that. OK, so another important thing that I want to tell you about is what's called machine epsilon. So if we're looking at a standard here where I have a number that is written like this, then you can see here that if I take that number, so if I take 1 here, the number 1, and then I add 2 to the minus 23 to it, then I'm going to get something that I can actually represent, and it's going to be different from just 1. On the other hand here, if I look at 1.0 and then I add 2 to the minus 24 here, then, sorry, I can't use the 24th bit here, so this is just going to be equal to 1, right? So that means that I'm talking about now a small quantity that if I add it to 1 in floating points, it's going to be lost. And that defines what is called machine epsilon here. Sometimes it's just called epsilon here. And it would be so it's defined as the smallest number that when added to 1, it gives us something that's different from 1. So in this case, it is 2 to the power minus 23. And that turns out to be something like 1.2 times 10 to the minus 7. So roughly what this means is that if you're doing calculations in floating point numbers that are represented this way with 32 bits, you can only hope to get roughly, if you're lucky, 6 to 7 digits of precision. If you print out your result at the end, it might print out 16 digits here, and you might think that they would all be precise, but it's very unlikely that that's going to turn out to be the case, because the epsilon here in all your underlying representation is actually 10 to the minus 7. So obviously, this means that nobody today would actually, if you're doing serious scientific calculations, you would never do them in 32-bit floating point. You would go up to 64-bit. It still lingers on because maybe 10, 15 years ago, it was rather costly to go up to the higher precision. So in order to finish your calculation, you might be doing them in these 32-bit floating point numbers. Yeah.
Well, I was just going to say that single precision floating point numbers are very often like graphics cards do a lot with them, and people have found ways of using multiple of them to amplify accuracy. And then, so I mean, it's an obscure use, I'll warrant, but they.
Yeah, you can do wonderful things
today.
But if you're writing a little Fortran program for calculating, for instance, the Bessel functions, which you may or may not be doing for the homework, then you can look at it, and then you can say, well, if you go in, and yeah, I'm doing this just using ordinary reals, then you cannot hope, when you're looking at the value that you would have for the Bessel function, to get more than 6 or 7 digits. And this is something that you know, please remember this. If you don't, want to sort of memorize the representation of floating point numbers, you know, all power to you. I'm not going to complain about that. But please remember that there's something that results from that, and that's what we call a machine epsilon, and it's going to impact heavily all your calculations. So I'm just. I want to say two more things here. First is if we go up and we look at, if we look at the real axis, it'll look something like this. If we think about these 32-bit numbers here, then the highest one we could represent was something like 10 to the 38. And then the smallest one was 10 to the minus 38, roughly. We're not going to fight over some prefactors. And then we start with the same thing over here. So if you exceed this, you're going to encounter what's called overflow. And precisely what will happen at that point in your program is a little bit hard to tell. It depends on exception control, as it's sometimes called. Likely, what's going to happen is that your program will just fail. But that may not be the case. Here, we would talk about underflow. And again, what precisely happens when your number becomes too small to represent, it depends a little bit on the system that you're looking at. But one possibility is that it could just be set to 0. Here we would talk about negative underflow. And here about negative overflow. And I think the only thing I want to tell you is that you should avoid this. Don't write a program that depends on specific things happening when you reach overflow or underflow or things like that. If you actually go ahead and divide by 0, for instance, it may come back and tell you that whatever you got back was NaN, which is not a number, and if you see that error message, NaN, that's what it means. Yeah?
How do you represent 0 in this way?
it would usually be a mantissa here, which would just be all zeros here.
Then my question becomes, how do you represent one?
Well, one would just be one here. You're right. You could say that 0.000, I cannot put it into this normalized form here. So obviously, something special is done with that number. Precisely how this is. So most of the floating point operations are actually done in specific hardware and so forth. But you can probably figure out that even multiplying a number like this, you can see that I explicitly avoided telling you how you would multiply two floating point numbers together, because it becomes an art, right? And so you can see that a lot of stuff has to be going on here. I have to assure that I get back to the normalized form and so forth. So just take it on faith that a lot of the stuff is handled by the hardware behind your back and you don't want to know about it. This is probably already more than you want to know, right? So, yeah.
Well, what the question then is, how to put zero for?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you on?
What?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't. I want to continue.
Okay.
So.
That's all.
It's all. Yeah. So you can, if you want to see how it's done, you can. We can all have a look at it yesterday or right after. What was I going to say? Please be aware that things will underflow and they will overflow, and you're going to end up having a program that's going to spit back something to you, which will be NaN, which means not a number. And that just means that you did something which the computer didn't like. So if you go in and ask for what is often referred to as double precision here, then so none of what I'm telling you is sort of written in stone anywhere. It's design issues by different standards, and things might not 10 years from now look like what I'm telling you today. So usually what we call double precision is 64 bits. That would have not 23, but 52 bits for the mantissa. And I would have 11 bits here for the exponent. And so it would go from minus 1,022 and then up to 1,023. So if I talk about the machine epsilon, which is largely what's going to be dropped in your calculations when you add it to one here, then that turns out to be 2.2 times 10 to the minus 16. So that looks a little better here. The largest number is 1.8 here, and then 10 to the power 308. And if you look at the tutorial and whatnot, then I'm actually sometimes requesting a range for the decimal exponent, which will go up to 308. And the smallest number that we can look at before we reach underflow is then something like that. Okay. So then you say that, well, whatever I do, I will need more precision then this, and if you do that, then you can, of course, go in and ask for what we might call quadruple precision, which would be 128 bits. And I don't even know what these numbers would be like for that system. But obviously, it's going to be better than it is for double precision. So the numbers that you should sort of stick in your head here is an epsilon for the double precision, which is 10 to the minus 16. And then the largest and smallest numbers, which is powers up to 308. So do I have 4 more minutes, or are you all too hungry to listen to any more? What? Okay. Because I wanna do a little example here, which is a little toy example, but it's sort of instructive. It's not realistic, but we wanna have a look at how things actually look here. So I'm gonna be looking at some numbers where I just have 3 bits for the mantissa. And my normalized form, or, well, I'm not even going to normalize them from the beginning. I'm just going to assume that I have 3 bits of this form here. And then I can multiply them by 2 to the power plus and minus k here, where k and bi here, it can be either 0 or 1, right? So the numbers we can write are now fairly simple. It'll be 0.000, 0.001, 0.010, and then 0.011, 0.1, 0.0, 0.1, 0.1, 0.1, 0.1, 0.1, 1, 1, no, yeah, 1, 0, and then 0.111, right? So these numbers, if I interpret them according to these rules, the first one here is going to be 0. The next one is going to be 1 over 8 here, then 2 over 8. Then 3 over 8 here, then 4 over 8, and then, of course, 5 over 8, 6 over 8, and then 7 over 8. And in this case here, then what are my other possibilities here? Well, I can multiply this by an exponent, which I just did here, which was 2 to the power 0. Then I can, of course, also multiply these numbers by 2 to the power 2 here. So what would that give me? It would give me 0 here, and then 2 over 8, 4 over 8, 6 over 8, 8 over 8, then 10 over 8, 12 over 8, and 14 over 8. And, oh, sorry, this 2 to the power 1, right? And then the last remaining possibility I have is 2 to the power minus 1. So this here would be then 0, and then I would get 1 over 16, then I get 2 over 16, 3 over 16, 4 over 16, then 5 over 16, 6 over 16, and then 7 over 16. So what you can do here, and it's, of course, entirely trivial, is that I can try to plot this on an axis here. And I can, so for the moment, I'm going to forget about the fact that I can also represent negative numbers. So let's just leave that out of the game. And I'm going to use an axis here where I'm looking at times 1 over 16. So if I look here in units of 1 over 16, then I can plot the numbers that I can represent. So I can represent 0, and I could represent 1 over 16. They were over there. Then I could represent also 2 over 16. And I'm going to just switch over and write 3 instead of 3 over 16. So I can write 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 16. But then something happens, because if you look in this table, you can see, well, 9 16ths is not there. So the next one is 10, then 12, 14 here, and then 16, which would be 1. We can write 1. But then something odd happens again, because the next one up is not 17, 18, 19, but it's 20. And then I'm running out of space here, because the two remaining numbers are actually 24 16ths and 28 16ths. So obviously, through this format here, the numbers that we can actually represent are not evenly spaced. Right? So you might think that, well, the precision I get when I'm up in high numbers is the same, but please take into the account that, well, you're fighting against this. The other thing is that if I do go ahead and then say, well, the numbers that I want to look at are normalized, then if we choose the normalization scheme here, where I do 0 dot, which was not, by the way I did it over here, but just in this toy example, then I could say that, then we might make a choice and say that these numbers are normalized. Then you can see that over here I had 1 16ths, 2 16ths, and 3 16ths, and they were actually suddenly dropped. So these are not normalized and would usually not be there. And that creates what is sometimes called the hole at 0. So that's it for floating point numbers. I hope you're understanding them a little better now. We're just going to poke around with them in the tutorial this afternoon and see what they look like on Proteus. But basically, I know I teach these computational courses in a number of settings, and people today assume that anything that goes on the computer is an infinite precision. There's sort of an inherent representation, and particularly also if the computer writes something out, then people assume that all the digits must be right. And basically what I want to tell you is no. Don't trust that. You actually have to think a little bit about what it is you represented and what precision you can expect. See you all tomorrow.